on 98 FM and online. This is Phoenix FM.
Yeah, hello and good evening and welcome to this week's Orient Hour on Phoenix FM. I'm Trevor Singfield and in the studio with me tonight is Lee Boyce. How are you, Lee?
Yeah, not too bad, Trev. All good.
That's good to hear. And hopefully on the line should be our main host, Steve Tung. Steve, can you hear us?
Of course we can, Trevor. Well done. Evening, everyone, including Lee and all our listeners. So, interesting times. Supposed to be an old Chinese curse, I think. May you live in interesting times. And at Leighton Orient, we certainly do, don't we? I think since we three were last together on the programme, we've had the head coach sacked. We've had a new interim appointment as manager. Three games under Joby, a win, a defeat, a draw. Our two leading scorers this season have each been dropped. We've had a change of system last night, a change of style, it seemed to me, in the first two games. And a change of target from the board, who, after their investment in the transfer window, wanted us in the playoffs. That's looking a long way away at the moment, unfortunately. So plenty to talk about. I know there are some strong views here. We'll hear, as usual, from Dulcet Dave and Matt Hiscock about last night's game. And delighted to say we have the view from the dressing room, Dan Kemp, who came closer than anyone to getting us a goal last night against his old club, Stevenage. He's been talking to us as well. That long interview later in the programme. But let's take things in order. It was just 11 days ago, within an hour of the 3-1 home defeat by Tranmere, it was announced that Ross Embleton had been sacked. 13 months as full-time manager. At that point, it was no wins in seven games, two goals in those seven games, 14th in the table. A lot of supporters were losing faith in Ross. Now, Lee Boyce, we'll start with you, because I don't think you lost faith in Ross. So what was your reaction to the sacking?
First of all, Steve, Andy's just taking a deep breath and looking at me very nervously. But, we all know I backed Ross from the start. And I still believe that even though things wasn't going well at the time, given more time, he would have possibly changed it around. I look back, and I know Trevor's got some stats on this, so I don't want to go too much into what he's going to say, but I look back over the seven games, the last seven games before we got sacked, we was... In playoffs, and then there was a lot of injuries and a lot of suspensions that affected the team. He finally got his starting 11 that he wanted, and I think that played a lot into him getting sacked.
Yeah, you didn't lose faith in that 4-3-3 system. That apart from what one league game away to Colchester, Ross basically, well, he refused to change. Basically, didn't he, even when we weren't getting the results.
Ross kept saying, and he said this for a long while, that he doesn't have the players to play a different formation, or 4-4-2 formation. I think the fact Joby's gone in with basically the same formation gives a lot of weight to Ross's argument. I mean, if it was as simple as playing a 4-4-2, then surely Joby wouldn't have gone down that route and played a 4-3-3.
Yep. Trevor, your take on the sacking, perhaps in the light of the change priorities as well of the board about the transfer window?
Yeah, I'll come to that in a second, Steve. But I've got a question for you, which was posted to me by my good friend Sean Bird. He said to me about football managers, and my question is how many Orient managers have won over 100 games for the club in a single term as manager? So I'll let you ponder over that one, but there's only three managers in our history that have won 100 games. So that just proves how hard it is to be a football manager to start with.
Oh, yeah.
So, coming back to the departure of Ross, I was never sort of one of in or out Ross, you know, on the Twitter and that. And I like to follow our football club, and you back whoever's in charge, and that's including the board. But when you listen back to Nigel's interview about the appointment of Joby, he goes back to like the turn of the year. And in the turn of the year, we just beat Salford 1-0. And I think DJ's last goal before injury. 2 weeks later, we beat Morgan 2-0 in a thralling game. And most fans were happy. I think we may have crept into the playoffs, whichever way you look at it. But then that's when it all starts goes wrong. We lose to Forest Green 1-0. Mistake by Ling led to the goal. Ebu Adams up to his normal tricks, but Happy got a red card, and I think that's the same game we may have lost Engle through injury. So this is building up, like Lee was just saying. Bolton away, 2-0, we were poor. The only positives that Kemp makes his debut and Freeman comes on as well. Follow that with the 0-0 draw at Crawley with 10 men for 60 minutes with Hector being sent off. We also lose Sartorio in that game for the season, but the plus point of that game was Thompson's debut. Go on to the 0-0 draw with Colchester. Ling got injured. He's replaced by Happy coming back. Suspension. And DJ makes the bench. It wasn't a great game, we know that. February the 20th, draw 1-1 with Port Vale. Mistake for the goal. Pretty steady game with a late flourish. But then a turn for the worse for Ross, probably looking into it, was the defeat at Bradford. We and his post-match interval wasn't great. Maybe some of the social media got to him that... whether he read or people passed on to him. And then against Tranmere, what can we say? It was his last game in charge. Individual errors costing him. So looking at that, there's a lot adding up to a dip in form for Orient, and we haven't got the biggest depth in squad. And it's the first blip we've had under Ross of an in-and-out sort of tenure, like he's interim, this, that and the other. And he's been good and bad. So I think he's been let go a bit premature. And following on for that, I'm not so sure that the board's view of we've backed Ross in the window is a fair comment. Ross was given 4 new players. And I think Dan Kemp obviously looks good. And I think that's a good deal, 2.5 years, good prospect. Adam Thompson is an excellent signing. And he's going to be a big loss for Joby for the rest of the season. I come to Freeman. Looked good first couple of games, but has flattered deceived since. And I'm not sure we know where his best position is, net. And then finally, we get Abrahams on loan from Newport County. And they've sent him on loan for a reason, I guess, because he's not really doing much for them. And if I'm honest, he's no Kevin Campbell. So I get to that point, and I don't think the ball can say... we've backed you, Ross, in the window. I just think we've been depleted by injuries and we haven't got the squad in depth and we haven't got the next window to get the better players in of League One standard. So I do believe that Ross was harshly dismissed. That's my point of view on that. We've got other things as well, but you lose DJ's goals. Angle was coming back. I know lots of fans don't like him, the position he's playing, but it's a team game. He works hard. Sartorio... and we've got no replacements. And then Hector's not seen any action since hardly the red card. So from there, it's a bit of a shambles, to be perfectly honest, until we now come to the appointment of Joby.
I mean, you can add Craig Clay into that as well, because he missed two or three games through injury. So that was like six players we lost. And like I said, not a really big squad in a seven-game spell.
Yeah, okay. If I've got the figures right, I've given Ross, purely as full-time manager in the last 13 months, I make it 41 games, so just under a full season, of which he won 15 and lost 16. So that's an average of about 1.3 points. As Kent Teague has regularly said, we're aiming at about 1.5, which should get us pretty close to the playoffs. So... the way we were going, we weren't going to get in the playoffs this season. The point I was making about aims the board had set was that, let me quote Nigel Travis from the interview you mentioned, I think said in terms of personnel, they felt we should be in the playoff places. This is speaking after the players brought in the transfer window. And I made a note of when Kent Teague was on one of the other podcasts at the start of February. The plan was League One in 6 to 8 years. That's the plan right from the start when they took over, and we're now in year four. So he's saying, you know, we're not behind schedule by any means. But he also said in that same interview, with the squad we have, we feel we should be in the top seven. So were the goalposts moved to that extent? Would Ross have been allowed to carry on to the end of the season if we were just improving on last season? Was he suddenly under pressure to get into the playoffs?
I think, Steve, I think like what you've just said there, we was top seven, and then we've had that run of injuries, like I said, six, seven players, injury suspensions. We was top seven. We was on... They moved the goalpost, if you want, to say that now we want top seven, and we was. Yes, we faded away in a seven-game period. But Ross has now got his squad back, or the squad was now back. The players he had that he wanted back were now fit. So to now throw him under a bus and out the door, when he's got his team back and he's finally got the team that he wants to be picking, it just seems... He's left a very bad taste for me. Let's just put it that way.
All right. What about the issue of entertainment? Because some of those games, probably not the same for us, probably makes it worse sitting in front of our laptops rather than actually being at the ground and enjoying everything that goes with it. But some of those games, especially in the run of one goal in six games, when Ross, to be fair to him, decided to tighten up the defence, some of those were pretty dull, weren't they? I think supporters will put up with dull football if the team is winning. But really, he got the best of both worlds. We weren't getting much entertainment, and not winning can be fatal for any manager, can't it?
Well, I accept that the football on offer was poor, but sometimes a 1-0 win is a good win. Take the Salford game, it's enthralling. But it does come down to what players he had to select, and obviously everybody has their fans' favourites, this, that and the other. And I think... eventually the board or some members of the board got very frustrated with the way we were playing, and they openly say they read social media. Maybe they shouldn't, because there is a small minority of people who like to just put the Orient down. It's an occupation, you know what I mean? It's to put them down. But yeah, the football was poor, but it's also fine margins. You see the chance that DJ had against Port Vale, chipped over the keeper, it's 2-1. And it's like everything, you put a couple more chances away and then Ross could still be in the job. But that's the board's prerogative. And has the football since, I know it's only three games, been any much better? But you've got to give the guy 10 games minimum to see his style of football.
Yeah, well, we'll come on to Joby. So Ross sacked, and let's all say, as all supporters surely felt, Orient through and through, a thoroughly decent man. Very sad the way it worked out. So what would they do next? They've often said, in the light, really, of the tragic event of Justin's passing, the board have said they've always had some sort of provisional plans in mind. It was no surprise to me that they went for Joby, who they've always said they respect hugely. Interesting, perhaps, to make him interim manager and not head coach. And his decision to stop playing was understandable, I suppose, but it's proving a bit unfortunate, I think. But, Lee, were you surprised that he was the next man in?
No, because I think it was mentioned in the group chat during the Tranmere game. I think I brought up then that I felt Ross was going to be sacked after the game and that Joby would be the one taking his place. So I wasn't surprised. What does surprise me is that they had a two-hour interview with a coach that they've had in the squad for 2 years, and they needed a two-hour interview with him after the game to appoint an interim manager. I find the whole procedure bizarre.
Well, whatever plan B you've got in mind, it takes a while to get in a new manager. Shortlist interviews, lots more homework than when they appointed Carl Fletcher, not least because, of course, the principal investor and chairman are in the United States, so no travel possible either way. So it was very much an interim appointment. Let's consider how it's been under Joby. He had, maybe one day's training with the squad, and that game at Grimsby, which we won, deservedly, I think. Nice goal from a different set piece for once, the different corner routine. Huge blow with Adam Thompson fracturing his ankle there, as a very, very good central defender to bring in, as Trevor had said. We were expecting a much tougher test at Exeter, and we certainly got one there, 4-0 down soon after half-time. And in the second half, I suppose, when Connor Wilkinson came on at half-time, Trevor, for the second half, it was really Ross's line-up without Joby, and Ross's formation, as you said.
Yeah, I mean, that was a horror show, wasn't it, Exeter? We don't have to talk too much about that. But some of the other things I have looked at of Ross's tenure, especially in games going back to the turn of the year when the back four was Ling, Akinola, Happy and Brophy. He sort of stumbled upon that because Akinola was playing right back for some time, but them two look very comfortable together, and I think that's would be my favourite back two together with and I think Ling is missed when he's not in the side because he does defend and defend properly, makes the odd mistake like all fourth division footballers, but he also allows Brophy to go up the park. So, but Brophy's got great pace to get back. But yeah, it was quite strange to see sort of reverting back to that. And I suppose one reason he may have done that is like to shore the game up for complete humiliation and then get back to the training ground to then tweak what then happened on Tuesday night with Dan Kemp going in sort of a number 10 position.
Yes, Lee, those two games, Grimsby and Exeter, chalk and cheese, really, because of the standard of the opposition, really?
Well, Grimsby's one of the worst teams I've seen in many years. And we created chances, but so did they. They had chances as well. I thought they were both poor games. I mean, I thought Exeter was, well, we all know, no words needed on that game. But I thought Grimsby was poor. I thought we got the win. We probably deserved it against one of the worst teams I've seen in probably 10 years.
What struck me, I don't know if this was just me, but did it strike you we played a very different style, especially at Grimsby? We'll hear from Dan Kemp about this in a minute. But it was a lot more direct, which is what many supporters wanted, wasn't it?
Well, maybe, maybe not. But I was completely surprised by the selection of Turley. I mean, he come from absolutely nowhere to starting in the back two. He's performed okay, but I thought at Exeter we were found a little bit wanting for the pace, plus it was just a horror show there. But yeah, some of the it was an eye-opener of Joby's first team selection, and if you do follow the Twitter feed of the Orient, I mean, it's quite interesting reading everybody's comments. It's probably one of the highlights of the evening for me, because I generally avoid it after the game, win or lose.
And Lee, you've been a fan of Tunji Akinola, but that game at Exeter was surely his worst game, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, let's get it right. He's a young boy who's at his first professional club, like first team, and he's played well. Yeah, he didn't have a great game there, and you can sort of forgive him for that sort of thing. Yeah, going back to what you're just saying about the formations, I can see why. I can understand why people want to get the ball forward quicker. Obviously, it's more exciting. But I think the Exeter game shows why it's also important to keep hold of the ball.
Yeah. And actually, for the Grimsby one, and probably the first half at Exeter, we were probably knocking the balls forward to the smallest front three in the league. I would have thought Kemp, Johnson and Brophy. But there we are. Well, let's get right up to date with Stevenage. Stevenage at home last night, a team who were on a good run. Danny Johnson was dropped, Sam Ling was back in defence, and a 0-0 draw. Dave Victor and Matt Hiscock were there as ever, and this is how they saw it from up on the gantry.
Well, Matt, after quite a chasing on Saturday at Exeter, it was a hard-fought, goalless draw against Alex Revell's Stevenage on Tuesday night.
Yeah, it was. I think a lot of fans that would have watched that tonight would have been disappointed in terms of the attacking play they saw from the O's. Joby McEnough on the touchline, he'll be pleased that he saw his team keep a clean sheet after the 4-0 hammering at Exeter.
There were very few clear-cut chances. I only made one of note in the first half from the O's. Connor Wilkinson with the drive that went wide of the target. The woodwork coming to the Orient's rescue and then, of course, denying them. Kemp with the strike that smashed against the post.
Yeah, he did try something different. The interim manager, by changing the formation, it looked more like a 4-2-3-1 tonight. Dan Kemp had a little bit more of a free roll at times, but they just couldn't break Stevenage down, a team that are resolute, and that's their fifth consecutive clean sheet. Alex Revell has done a sterling job there, lifted them out of a relegation zone to now a comfortable position mid-table.
And of course, it was a start for Tristan Abrahams. The D-Day, Dan Johnson, the leading marksman on the substitutes bench, he came on, he had a great opportunity, one-on-one with the goalkeeper.
Yeah, so massive opportunity, and he'll be in the dressing room now kicking himself because he knows he should have put that in the back of the net. He was just trying to dink it over the keeper, but the connection wasn't right from Danny Johnson. And I think at the moment you can see he's a striker. He was looking a little bit isolated, was the description JB McEnough gave on Saturday, but he looks a man who's a little bit frustrated and needs a goal.
Lawrence Vigouroux, the busier of the two goalkeepers, and after what happened on Saturday, it's important that he had a clean sheet.
Yeah, and he made a fantastic save as well midway through the second half, a stinging drive which he got a fingertip to. So he'll be pleased to have almost got back to business, back to basics after Saturday, which again was a difficult afternoon for him. But he's been consistent throughout the season. He's definitely been, without doubt for me, one of the O's top performers.
Scunthorpe on Saturday, O's need a win.
Yeah, they do need a win, and I think the expectation was set from Joby at Exeter. He was expecting big points from these two games. He's picked up one tonight, so you kind of feel 3 points is a must on Saturday for him. That will be the minimum. That will be the expectation from the fans. Let's hope they can deliver.
And off the field, there is development here. Is the roof going to be replaced on the old East Stand?
Yeah, there is. Interesting tonight. Turn up and you see scaffolding, and no surprise the club obviously making preparations and beginning to repair that. For me, the East End, still one of the best here at Brisbane Road. Can get a great atmosphere in there on a match day when it's full, particularly with a roof, but it does need a bit of repair. I think one or two fans were getting a little bit wet when the rain came last year, so good to see a little bit of repair work being done, and hopefully it'll be ready for them come August.
It was over a year now since we were all together. It's just not the same. We do it again on Saturday. Scunthorpe, the visitors. Thanks, Matt.
Thank you to Matt and Dave. I think it's going to be August when we're back in, rather than any playoff games in the end of May, but we'll come to that later. Lee, it was a change of system to a 4-2-3-1, and of course they wouldn't have had much time to work on that. It should have meant a bit more support for Tristan Abrahams, who started up the middle. Did you think it worked in any positive way?
I thought Dan Kemp looked very good in playing sort of on that 10 role behind Abrahams. Apart from that, no, I don't. I think it was very very slow and didn't seem to move the ball very well at all.
Trevor, I believe you missed the first half, so we'll tell you what happened at the first half hour. Sorry, we'll tell you what happened in the first half hour. Connor Wilkinson had a shot that went wide. That's all you need to know, really. It was a very good pass by Craig Clay, actually. Craig Clay put him in, but it wasn't close. So that was what you missed. What did you make of what you saw after that?
Bit the same, bit pedestrian. I'm not happy with the two sort of holding players in front of the centre halves. If we're meant to be going for it, you don't really need them there. Clay and Cisse. Room for Hector. I can't believe he's not had a sniff since Joby's come in. Only he could be able to tell us why. Not even coming off the bench, and didn't really change anything till 75 minutes in a pretty lacklustre second half. But maybe that's the strength in depth of what we've got to work with on the bench. I mean, he brings Dayton on, who's not actually going to change the game, is he? So yeah, plenty of work in progress for Joby to get on with, but yes, it's wasn't no different to watching what Ross served up. So if I was the board looking at that, I don't think they would be best pleased. If that's going for it, what, one shot in two games, then I hate to see it when we don't go for it.
Yeah, well, suddenly we were passing it again. 539 passes, I think, last night. But the net result, sadly, as you say, was one shot against the post from the young man who we're going to hear from now. It's high time we did that. Dan Kemp, signed permanently from West Ham in the transfer window, of course. He joined the three of us earlier today on Zoom.
Well, Dan, welcome to the Orient Hour. Great to have you. Take us right back, if you would, to the beginning. I think it was Chelsea, wasn't it, at the age of six, which was very young. And why Chelsea?
Hi, thank you. First and foremost, thanks for having me on. So I started really young, age six, at Chelsea. I was playing for like my local Sunday team at the time in Kent. And I got approached by a few clubs, but I decided that from a young age I'd be training with Chelsea, and I went there a good few days a week, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, right, just regular training and games. And then luckily enough, at age nine, I was offered, under eight, sorry, I was offered my first contract at Chelsea, which then put me into the academy at under nine. So, yeah, no, it was a young age to start, but I enjoyed it. It was a really good time.
I imagine looking at you that at age six, you were quite small. did anyone ever say at any stage of your career that you might be too small to make it?
No, I wasn't. I don't think there's ever been no one that's ever said that to me directly, but I'd say at times it does come with a bit more of a challenge being a smaller player, especially growing up through the age groups. I remember when that age where everyone's growing at different rates, age 13, 14, I had to develop my technical side of the game so that I was able to manipulate the ball and come out on top in that respect, rather than like using my physical attributes, because the lads I was playing with at the time were so much bigger than me. I think as I've got older, that's helped me with regards to playing now, because it's not leveled out, because I'm never going to be the tallest person on the pitch. But I think as you get older, you grow into your body, and it's something that's helped me from a young age, being small. I've had to develop certain areas of my game.
And did you genuinely always believe that you would make it as a professional, or were there ever doubts?
I think in this game, you always have to 100% be confident in yourself and back yourself. I was always confident that if I worked hard and gave it my best every day to improve, that I'd give myself the best possible chance to do that. Obviously, I'm still very young in my career, and there's so much more that I want to achieve as a footballer. So I know I've got to keep working and keep developing. But my dream as a young boy was always to be a professional footballer. So I'm proud of where I am today, but I want to get a lot further.
And from Chelsea, it was West Ham. And Lee, I think you said you came across Dan yourself at West Ham when he was about, 16 by that time?
Yeah, well, Dan, when you come in, I remember when you signed for West Ham and just left Chelsea and all that, I mean, there was a big buzz around the recruitment department that you was coming in, especially after Declan had come over from Chelsea. I mean, how did you find the change going from Chelsea to West Ham?
I had so many good years at Chelsea and I enjoyed it so much. I feel like I've developed a lot as a young player and as a footballer. And I think I've said this before, but there's so many good young academies in our country. And I feel like at Chelsea, I got to the age where at that sort of time, there wasn't many players breaking through into the first team. And I felt like with the opportunity that West Ham provided me with a chance to develop further in my career, I feel like it was a really exciting time for me, and I thoroughly enjoyed my time at West Ham. I really enjoyed the working with the staff, the players, and I feel like it did help me massively grow as a footballer and as a person. With regards to your question, was it different? I feel like every club's different in certain ways, but the structure of academies so nowadays are so good that I think they're not too much different, but some clubs have got certain ways of doing things. It doesn't make it better or worse. It's just different. But the academy structure, I think now for young players, is maybe as good as it ever has been. Like, there's so many good young, good young players coming through. It's really exciting.
A clip on YouTube on a Twitter last night, the Soccer AM clip.
Yeah.
Of you, Dec Rice. Carlos, do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember that. They came over to the training ground and we had to do a few bits for soccer, and that was good fun.
Yeah, that's all right. Been there long, I don't think we've done it.
Sorry?
Is that Steve?
Trevor, over to you.
Oh, go on.
Yeah, obviously you talk about the early days at Chelsea. When you're going from 6 to the ages of 11, 12, 13 and you see other youngsters next to you being turned away and sort of you're not good enough, how does that affect you, or does it give you more drive to make sure you're not the next one being told it's not for you sort of thing? Does it really spur you on? And how do you think, or how do you feel for your teammate who you've been with, say, 4 or 5 years, being said he's not good enough?
Yeah, I think it's definitely something for me as a footballer. I just always, well, even to this day, my number one focus is just enjoying my football, because I know that when I'm enjoying my football, I play my best. So throughout my younger years up till right now, I just try to go out there every single day on the training pitch, whether a game or training, and just enjoy myself. It enable you to just forget about possibly the worries or the concerns or any stress coming with the game, and just try to improve yourself every day. I think there is a lot of, you see a lot of people not make it along the way, and it does, in a way, keeps you on your toes, because you want to make sure that that's not you. But I think as a footballer, as hard as it is, I think sometimes it's just important to make sure that you're doing what you can every single day, just to, as you say, make sure that that's not you. You're not one of the ones that will be let go. But with regard, I had it personally with my friend, obviously, Depp. He got released along the way, and it was really tough, because you're growing up with the boys for a number of years, and you see them every day going to work, or see them every day. So to see them leave, it's really tough. But I think from an individual point of view, it does spur you on just to make sure that you're not one of the ones that will be let go. But no, it was tough at the time to see some of your friends along the way be released.
And Dan, presumably what happens at Premier League clubs in particular, by the time you're 16 maybe, but certainly 17, 18, they're bringing in a lot of foreign players as well, aren't they? Which makes it even tougher for local lads like yourself.
Yeah, definitely. Especially the top academies also, there's always the demand to keep progressing their players, which does to provide competition from abroad, like you're saying. I think it comes back to what I said earlier, really. It's about just staying confident within yourself, improving your game daily, and just believing that you're as good as these players that you're bringing in, and going out and showing why you deserve to be there as well as them, but also why you're better than them in the way.
And then at a club like West Ham, you often get the opportunity to go out on loan. Tell us about your first loan, which was Stevenage, wasn't it?
Yeah, so I ended up going, my first loan was Stevenage, and it was a good experience for me. When I went there, we were struggling at the bottom of the table, so it was good for me to go and experience league football and the tougher end of the league, where you're playing for 3 points every week, which was so important for me as a young as a player, just to experience that for the first time. But also, we were struggling at the time, so I had to show different sides of my game at times, more battle inside of my game, working more off the ball, in order to grind out results where we were struggling at the time. But it was a great experience for me. I really enjoyed my time there, and it was for me just to experience that league football for the first time, professional football. It just gave me that buzz, you know, that of playing in front of fans every week. And I just, from that first experience, I just wanted more of that feeling.
Wasn't it the very first time against the Orient, a sub, the 3-0?
Yeah, I came on 3-0 down at the time. It was Leighton Orient played really well that day. I can say we now because I'm playing for them, but they definitely deserved the 3 points on that day, that was for sure.
Well, Lee, I think, was talking about you already and saying, in terms of coming to Orient, weren't you, Lee? Was that something you were pushing for?
Yeah. I've mentioned it a few times, like last January, sort of thing, about Dan coming in. And I remember you scored a cracker against us in pre-season as well, Dan.
Yeah. I think there's been interest for a number of windows, really, from Leighton Orient about me coming to the club, but for whatever reason, it didn't really work out that way. But now I'm delighted to be here, and it's exciting, and I'm looking forward to hopefully playing and scoring more goals for this great club.
And you ended up Blackpool next, which was maybe a bit out of your comfort zone. Marvin, of course, had gone up there, same as you, really, only ever played for clubs down here. What was the attraction of Blackpool? Although, of course, it was a league higher in League One.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with you there. It was definitely, I think, as a person, but also as a player, sometimes it's really good to go outside your comfort zone and experience new challenges. For example, it was the first time that I moved away from home to live by myself. That was a good experience for me to look after yourself properly on and off the pitch. No, it was a really good experience. I really enjoyed my time there, experiencing League One football, playing for the manager up there, Neil Critchley, who plays a really good style of football. It was a good experience. I really enjoyed it. I feel like from all my loans, I've really benefited in different areas. For example, at Blackpool, we were very much a team that were on the ball. So I was able to develop my technical side of the game further, on and off the ball. And it was completely different from Stevenage, but I feel, really benefited me and has helped me become a better player, I feel.
We haven't heard much about Marvin actually recently. How's he been doing up there?
Yeah, no, Marvin was, as from the time I was there, was excellent. He was playing week in, week out. Probably, I'd go as far to say, has probably been one of their best players at Blackpool this season. Definitely played virtually every game when I was there and was doing excellent. And then I think of recent, he's just suffered an unfortunate hamstring injury, which has put him out for a while. But no, Marvin was brilliant when I was there, and he spoke so well about this club before in the change room when I used to speak to him about what his time was like at Leyton Orient, and he has nothing but good things to say about the club and everyone involved.
Dan, does it make a big difference when you go out on loan to somewhere like Blackpool and you know Marvin, because I guess your first day at work when you don't know a single soul can be quite daunting as a youngster as well?
Yeah, it does help when you know a few of the boys before going. But I feel like wherever I've been on so far in my career, I just tried to go in into the new club and just be myself. Try not to be any different than I normally am, because I'd like to think that if you get to know me, you know that I'm just a normal guy. You know, I enjoy playing football and I enjoy being around the boys, and I like to think that I just work hard for my teammates. But it's just about going there, being yourself, and just working hard each day on the training pitch. Then I think if you do that, you've got a great chance with being welcomed in by the group of players.
So you came down to Orient, met Ross and Martin Ling, I'm sure, and got in the team quite early. And after four games without a goal, you got us one against Port Vale, which perked everyone up. And I guess a bit of a confidence booster for you as well.
Yeah, no, definitely. I was from I'd like to say personally, from the moment I came into the club, everyone's first of all was made me feel so welcome, from the fans to the staff, to the chairman. Everyone's made me feel so welcome, and I'm really thankful for that. I came into the club and pretty much managed to get in the team straight away, which is really good for me, and I was delighted to get off the mark. And then of recent weeks, I've hit the woodwork a few times, which has been frustrating, but I'd like to think hopefully the goals will keep coming, and I work hard every day to try and provide that for the team.
And after only a couple more games, of course, we had a change of manager. And I think that happened to you at Stevenage as well, when Graham Westley left, indeed. What effect does that have on the players once a new manager comes in?
Yeah, no, it's difficult when a manager does leave, because as players, you can't help but feel a bit, you can't help but feel accountable, you know. It's never nice seeing someone be relieved of their duties as manager. Especially with Ross as well. He's such a good coach and a nice guy. And he was obviously a big part of me coming to the club, and I'll always be thankful for that for him. But I think with a new manager coming in, it's always just a case of trying to give your best for him, because ultimately we've all got the same common goal, and that's for Leyton Orient to do well. And so far, I've got to say, Joby's the gaffer's been absolutely brilliant with me. He's given me the confidence that to go out there and enjoy my football, get on the ball, create things for the team, and I really enjoy working with him every day. And I feel like we can definitely do well under him.
Tis the gaffer, is it? I was wondering what he was called now.
No, it's definitely the gaffer. He's definitely the gaffer. Even though we've played together, he's very much the gaffer, and he's definitely in charge.
Lee, over to you.
Yeah, Dan, like, coming down to Orient, I mean, did you speak to Tunji at all about what the club was like? He'd been there for a few months, and obviously, ex-West Ham boys.
To be fair, when I joined, Tunji was shocked because I had to keep it. I didn't really want anyone knowing before I joined with these things. But from the moment that Tunji was on loan and I was on loan at Blackpool, we were in constant contact because he's one of my good mates. So I was checking off on him, making sure he was enjoying it, and he had nothing but good things to say as well. And I'm pleased how well he's done this season. I feel like he's done really well, and may that continue for him.
And with Ross, how did he sell the club to you?
Sorry?
How did Ross sell the club to you when you met Ross?
Yeah, no, Ross sold the club to me really well, really. I knew quite a lot about Leyton Orient already from previous talks in windows. I've spoke to the manager a few times in previous windows before joining. I knew that it was a club that has got ambition, it wants to go forward, and that's really exciting for a player, a young player like myself. It's not a club that wants to stay where we are. We want to move forward, and I want to be a big part of that. So it's a club that definitely wants to go in the right direction, and that's exciting.
Trevor, your turn.
Last night you were sort of playing a number 10 role. Am I correct in thinking that? And what is going to be your actually preferred position going forward for Leyton Orient?
To be honest with you, I'm happy to play wherever the manager wants to play me. I just love being out there and playing. I've played the number 10 position a number of times throughout my career, and it is somewhere where I enjoy playing because I feel like you're constantly involved in the game. But I've played off the right, off the left. But I did enjoy playing as a number 10 last night. I felt like I was able to get on the ball and show what I could do.
It definitely one of the shining lights last night.
Thank you.
Yes, a couple of chances. In fact, before you hit the post, there was one, was it Nick Freeman's cross from the left that you've got? Maybe just a bit behind you or something?
Yeah, that one, I think Nick done well. He pulled it back to me, and I just tried to get a bit of contact on it to try and sweep it in. I think I didn't get enough on it, and the defender got a good blocking. But no, that's the area I like to get in on the ball, you know, on the half turn, shooting with either my right or left foot, just trying to manipulate the ball into areas where I can get a strike on goal.
Going back to that Joby's first game at Grimsby, you seem to be playing a much more direct style. Some thought it was a bit because of the pitch, that it was a bad pitch, but the impression was that that was what Joby wanted, to get the ball forward much more quickly. Is that fair?
I think on that in that game in particular, the pitch definitely forced us to do that because it was a tough pitch to play on that night. I think for us, it's just about us as staff, but also as players, it's just doing what the game demands of you. You know, for example, playing against different opposition, there's always going to be different sort of game plans. I think to enable us to win the game. So I think it's not set in stone the way we will play each and every game. We've got the gaffer's definitely got an identity of the way he wants us to play, but us as players, at times we've got to decide what that individual game needs, in which will enable us to win the game.
But last night, there seemed to be a lot more passing the ball around.
Yeah, no, definitely. That was I think, to be honest with you, the game plan worked really well in that aspect of the game. We were able to control the game for a number of, especially first half. We got into some really good positions between the lines. And that was more of the game plan to, you know, get passes, play between the lines, control the game, in which the last couple of games we didn't have as much control on the game as we'd liked, which we normally have done throughout the season. So it was important that we got back onto that. And I feel like if we can continue to control games and create chance, get into good areas like we did last night, the goals will come and we'll pick up more wins.
Trevor, your turn again.
Yeah. If we had to, going back to the numbers 10 position, I would like a player like that at the Orient and to make that position his own. And hopefully that maybe it could be a position you could make your own. Do you feel that we lack a little bit of support coming from the centre midfield to our forwards? Because there was quite a bit of a space there last night and it was a slow build-up. How do you feel about that aspect of the progress we're making under Jovi?
I definitely feel like we're making good progress, you know, other than obviously Saturday, where as players we wasn't good enough. We know that we let the staff down and ourselves down on Saturday. It wasn't a good performance. But I feel like under the gaffer and this coaching staff, they've definitely got a way that, certainly for me, I enjoy playing. It's a style that wants us to take the game to the opposition, which I enjoy, playing through the thirds. But also we know as players we've got to do better than what we have been doing, you know. We haven't won enough games recently and it's down to us to turn that around. So I think with like anything, we haven't had a lot of time on the training pitch between games to see for the manager to go through exactly what he wants. But we've off the pitch, we've been given clear ideas and framework in which we can build on, and it gives us clear ideas going into the game. And I think you saw that last night. We had a clear way of playing that at times got us success.
Okay.
What was the dressing room like Saturday, Dan? I mean, obviously, don't give too much away, but how was it? How was the atmosphere? How was Joby?
During the game or after?
Well, both, half-time, full-time.
I think at half-time, we were just saying, like, come on, more of the same, really, because we had, as players, we had control of the game, you know. They had a few chances where we conceded through our own, like, sloppy giving the ball away, but I think at half time you definitely say we were in control of the game. We had the majority of the ball, got into some dangerous areas. It was just about that fine tuning, final pass, final shot, just to, you know, get the ball in the goal, really. And then at full time we were pleased with the reaction from Saturday, you know, because it was a poor performance on a Saturday against Exeter. We all knew that. We all knew as players it wasn't good enough. So it was a better performance in that regard. We were just disappointed as players and staff that we couldn't get the win, but it was progress from Saturday.
Yeah. Dan, just one more. We've got to wrap up, really. But I believe you got caps for England under 19 and under 20. You talked briefly about Declan Rice there. What sort of other players were you playing with at those levels, and how did all that go when you played for England?
Yeah, so I was fortunate enough to play for England under 19 and under 20 levels. It was such a great experience for me. You know, it was an honour to play for my country. And it's something that I always wanted to do as a player, and obviously still want to do. Hopefully, one day in the future for the senior team, that's my number one goal, really. I played with some good players along my time, with the likes of Mason Mount, Declan Rice, Trevor Shaloba, Eddie Nketiah, Joe Willock, Chris Nelson. A lot of players that are doing really well, and that's somewhere that I definitely, hopefully, we can get to one day playing in the Premier League or at a top level. But for me, for now, it's just about performing consistently well for Leyton Orient and helping us get the wins that I feel like we deserve and the staff deserve for how hard everyone works each day. We're definitely a team that deserves to be higher than we are now. I'm 100% confident in that. So hopefully I can get some more goals and not keep hitting the post, and we can get some wins.
Well, we'll say amen to that. Dan, thanks very much for your time. Very best of luck for the weekend and for all the rest of your time at Leyton Orient.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me. Thank you.
There we are. Dan Kemp speaking earlier today with a few of the usual Zoom noises and pauses. One little misunderstanding at the end. I think Lee's question was about the dressing room at Exeter, which Dan thought was talking about last night's game. So to be clear, nobody thought we had control of the game at Exeter and was looking for more of the same. So happy to clear that up. Trevor, I haven't forgotten your question about Orient managers who've won 100 games. I'm going to go for Alex Stock and Frank Clark. I suspect Jimmy Bloomfield possibly didn't quite make it, so maybe one. I'm not so good on pre-war managers. Even I don't remember the pre-war managers, so I imagine there might have been one of those. What's the answer?
Well, the answer is correct of Frank Clark, 185 wins over 9 years. Alex Stock, 132 wins over 7 years. And the third one was Russell Slade, 102 wins in 4 years, and he's got the highest percentage of 42%. So I'm sure Twitter will want Russell back.
Oh, right.
Notable close accountants, Martin Ling with 98 and Tommy Taylor with 98. And they said Jimmy Bloomfield was over two spells and he got 105. So it just shows how hard it is to be a football manager before we can all sit in our armchairs giving them our best thoughts.
We know that. And, well, let's go on from here. Nice young man, Dan Kemp, by the way, and good luck to him. Could be on about four goals, as he said, instead of just the one, and a 2.5-year contract, so we assume he's round for a while now. But who else will be, and who will the manager be? Trevor Joby said last night he's not giving up on the playoffs. He has to say that, I suppose, but we're 11 points away with only 13 games left. That's a big gap. So have the playoffs gone, and once the manager and the board have to accept that, then what's next, you think, on and off the pitch?
Well, let's be honest. The playoffs have gone, and to be brutally honest, the squad is a mid-table squad. Ross probably got it overachieving slightly to get to seventh position. Joby's got his work cut out because it looks like he's just sort of basically shuffled the pack a little bit in his first three games. Big losses is obviously Thompson. It's going to go down to whether Joby wants it or other members of the Orient board putting some intervention in, saying that we may go down the route of a manager from outside. That could be a debate for another day. But it's all going to come down to how we recruit in the summer to where we go next. And it's an important window because there is a lot of players leaving the Orient, and some fans think that some of them are not giving it their best at the moment. But while there's still points we play for, there's always hope. But being realistic, we all know that that ship has sailed, to be honest, Steve.
Yes. Lee, would you, when we come to make a decision, Joby is only the interim manager, would you go in the end for some sort of continuity? Are there advantages in that, whether that's Joby or not? Or should we look outside the current setup altogether to bring someone in?
I've always been a massive fan of younger managers. That's the way I want to see go forward in the long term, is we get younger managers in. At the moment, I'd say it's probably a good argument to get an experienced manager in.
Right. And for the rest of this season, once, as we say, we finally have to give up the playoffs, time to experiment with players or system. We'll hope to get one or two of those injured players back as well.
Well, you can experiment with systems. I'd rather experiment with the system now to try and gain some momentum to get the wins. It's no good experimenting with players who are clearly not going to be playing for Leyton Orient next season. So if under the watchful eye Nigel Travis, he wants us to go for it. Well, I suggest we start going for it Saturday, and very, very quickly, if that dream is still to be had, because from the position where I'm sitting, it's clearly not going to happen. But hopefully I can be wrong.
Well, let's go for it on Saturday. Lee, any changes for Saturday? One or two, like Cisse, maybe his place might be in jeopardy?
I think there's a lot of players whose place should be in jeopardy, but I don't think there'll be many changes, no. I'll go for the old Julian Linnett and score, 0-0.
0-0. Trevor, any change of system as well? But are we likely to stick with the 4-2-4, what was it, 4-2-3-1, having tried it, do you think?
Well, I'd like to see Hector come in and replace one of the midfielders. Which one he chooses to take out, that's down to Joby. But I think Clay and Cisse are both much of a like. Clay's passing's a bit dodgy, but Cisse only can pass sideways. He was brought in originally as a breaking up play in front of the back two centre-halves when we were poor defensively. Now I think we're a better defensive unit. It's time to loosen the shackles a little bit with the holding midfielder, especially at home. But it's up to Joby what he sees there. I want to see Connor Wilkerson continue to play, maybe darting around more down the centre. He looked a threat.
All right, well, let's hope for a change of fortune. In the meantime, thanks to Trevor and to Lee, to Dulcet, Dave and Matt, and of course Dan Kemp, to Andy, our producer, and to Karen for getting the podcast out. And thank you very much for listening. Up the O's.
Sign up to pump. It's Brisbane Road. It ain't White Hart Lane. That's the wrong postcode. It ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10, and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world again. There's flats in every corner of the ground. You can get your kids in just £5. Get an Orienteer. It's only a quid. But there ain't no lids, cos it's an up-to-pump. It's Brisbane Road, it ain't White Hart Lane. That's a wrong postcode, it ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10, and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world again. We had an F-8 Cup 78. We had John Sear, that is most irate. We were club. We had Chris Tate's hair. I remember the moment that Lee Spill scored. I remember it's done on the message board. I remember the pleasure. I remember the pain. And I want to hear rocking all over the world again. This ain't Upton Park. It's Brisbane Road. It ain't White Hart Lane. That's a wrong postcode. It ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10, and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world again. This is St. Upton Park. It's Brisbane Road. It ain't White Hart Lane. That's a wrong postcode. It ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10, and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world. Till the end. If I thought you'd score, but I haven't seen a goal in God knows when. And I wanna hear rocking all over the world again. Cos this ain't Upton Park. It's Brisbane Road. It ain't White Hart Lane. That's a wrong postcode. It ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10, and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world again. This ain't Upton Park, it's Brisbane Road. It ain't White Hart Lane. That's a wrong postcode. It ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10, and you go, we're rocking all over the world again.
On the hour across Brentwood and Billericay, this is Phoenix FM.